This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, bringing you another event from the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council. On February 7th, VPTC teamed up with the Thomas Jefferson Economic Development Partnership to hold a third session on how businesses can get involved with the growth of Central Virginia's economy. A panel entitled Towards a Common Vision, A Call to Action was held at the Omni Hotel in Charlottesville as part of VPTC's Speakers Luncheon Series. Here's VPTC Director Gail Milligan.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Gail Milligan, and I am the Executive Director of the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council. It is my privilege to officially welcome everyone today to our third annual economic development presentation, presented in collaboration with the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development and sponsored for the third time by Wachovia Bank. The planning team for this event has done a great job putting together the program for you in what we hope will be a thought-provoking dialogue. Our goal is to create today definitive next steps from the dialogue that occurs today that will start with a survey that we'll send you later this week. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Shalene Moore with Wachovia. Shalene came to Charlottesville from Richmond about a year ago and very graciously agreed to continue supporting this event this year. It's interesting because Shalene is an entrepreneur and an artist and a banker, so she also has lots of different experience in the workforce, and we really appreciate your support, so thank you.
Gail, thank you for the introduction. Lee Middleditch was kind enough to remind me that Gail did not mention that I also graduated from the University of Virginia. So thank you all so much for being here. It's our pleasure to be able to sponsor this luncheon for the third year in a row. One of my predecessors, Elaine Chung, was instrumental, along with some of the people in this room, obviously, in getting this panel together in the first place. I'm looking at a full house. I understand there was a waiting list, so the luncheon has become a very popular venue and obviously something that's important to a lot of people. It's interesting because when I addressed this group a year ago, I think I'd been here for about 4 weeks. I had to leave before I could eat my dessert because I was closing on my house. And, I thought, what's this all about? You know, common vision and, what seems to be the problem? So after a year here in the market, I've really gotten a very involved and am very passionate about the concept of a common vision. And that's yet another reason why we were very eager to sponsor this again this year. I have the privilege today, for the second year in a row, of introducing our moderator, Brian Wright. Brian is a former chairman of the VPTC. He's also a partner with Williams Mullen, and Brian helped create the whole concept of the Common Vision series. Brian is going to introduce the rest of our panel, and again, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Shalene. And I really want to thank Wachovia for their leadership in this. It was Wachovia's, really, the seed of this whole idea started with Wachovia. So thank you for your continued support. Well, as you know, if you can recall, 3 years ago we started with a panel of really the major players in our region. It certainly wasn't inclusive of all the major players, but it included business through the Thomas Jefferson Partnership. It included the University of Virginia. We've heard from the University of Virginia Patent Foundation, University of Virginia Gateway, City of Charlottesville, and County of Albemarle. They've joined us two consecutive years, and they've also been involved in the Thomas Jefferson Partnership's annual events. So over the last 3 years, we've pretty well gotten to know what these entities need and what their future or what their vision is. Just to summarize, in our first meeting, we found that there's a need to build a critical mass of high-tech business in this region in some industry. We're just not sure which one. There's a need for workforce training, particularly in mid-level positions. There's a need to build political support for businesses, mainly in the county of Albemarle. The region has a high cost of living that is problematic to some businesses. We need compelling business reasons to locate in this region. We seem to attract a lot of high wealth individuals who retire here, but few businesses. Of course, we've all been privy to the exodus of large manufacturing companies over the last 6 years. Some specific observations: we need to improve our water supply and our roads. We need better access to seed capital from the startup business point of view. We need incubator space. And generally, we have a lack of community strategic planning. Following this first session with these insights, and I've got to tell you, I was walking down Monticello Mountain this Sunday with my 15-year-old daughter, who I was giving some wisdom to, you know, from my years of experience. She was facing a difficulty at her high school with recent events, and quite emotional about it. So I explained my view on the whole situation. She said, "Well, Dad, with all due respect, thank you, Captain Obvious." And so I know that many of these things may be obvious to you, but it's frankly taken me 3 years to figure them out. We've learned through the Thomas Jefferson Partnerships events that we need a regional perspective, and then we need political support to achieve a regional vision and then put that vision into play. In our event last year, we asked these entities specifically what their vision was over the next 5 to 10 years, and these things emerged. They want to see science, technology, and research as an economic reason to be in this region. It'll make it easier to develop where you want development. We need to increase economic diversity, cure the cost of living, or at least slow or reduce it, improve technology skills, diversify job opportunities, make better transportation. As an overriding theme, I think we've seen preserving our natural environment. We are seeing our three research parks becoming full, and we need to continue planned development patterns. And finally, we need to continue to build partnerships within our community for regional development. And I've got to say, I've seen cooperation among the community just build and build over the last 3 years since we've done this, all aspects of it. Those entities that I mentioned unanimously agreed that a thriving high-tech business community is compatible with maintaining or even improving the quality of life of this region. They also unanimously agreed that thriving high-tech business community is critical to success, the success of their organizations. So when asked as to the next step for a regional strategic plan, the major element that came out was communication. So that brings us up to last year. Over the last year, I've seen an improving political climate, particularly in the regions outside of Albemarle County. And I see a glimmer of hope in Albemarle County that they may embrace high-tech business when it's compatible with the quality of life that they wish to maintain. I've even heard rumors that they might even join the partnership. And I've certainly seen a lot more communication among the major players in the region about their specific needs and their futures. And as you all know, this region remains, as it has for many years, the best place to live in the country. So we've got a pretty good thing going here. And it's really against that optimistic backdrop that we meet today to discuss the future of our unique region. And more importantly, to stop talking about it, but begin a process of action. And it's my belief that this process can only be led by business. Businesses need to have a business reason to be here. The ultimate vision of that process will only succeed if it can be translated to the bottom lines of our businesses. I don't believe the process of determining this region's future can be led by our public entities. It's not their mission. They don't want to do it. They've got other things on their plate. Therefore, I think it's up to business to take the lead. I'm certainly not suggesting that business make the decision. We need to include everyone. But business certainly has to take the lead. And in this room, we have representatives of the business of this region. and a lot of the businesses of the region. And frankly, I'm not sure that we can get together and paint a common vision like you would an oil painting and have a fixed result. I think it's going to be fluid. But at the very least, I think we can get together and decide how we want to direct this region's economy. And I think other things will follow from that. So, in a spirit of cooperation, open communication, and taking action, we've invited three experts to talk to us today and call us to action. First, we have Dr. Catherine Renault, an expert in leveraging regional research and development assets and technology transfer for business ends. We also have Jeff Anderson on the end, who's the executive director of the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. It's the Commonwealth's economic development entity. He'll tell us what's happening in the Commonwealth and where he thinks we fit in. We also have our own Bob Damari. He's the executive director of the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development for our region, who will propose to you, the high-tech businesses of this region, a call to action. Now, before I introduce Dr. Renault, on your tables you'll find some green cards. Those are for questions. Please, if you don't have a pen, beg and borrow, and as we go through this, write your questions down. We will take questions, reserve time at the end for questions from the audience. So, let's get going. To start, let me introduce Dr. Catherine Renault. Dr. Renault is a program manager at RTI for tech-based economic development. Her expertise, in fact, her doctorate, is in tech transfer productivity and what influences entrepreneurial behavior. So not only is she well studied in it, she has experience in it. She is currently adjunct professor for public policy at UNC Chapel Hill. She was, on the practical side, managing director of CIT. There she built statewide networks of entrepreneurship centers and worked on access to capital for the emerging tech businesses of the Commonwealth. She has a PhD in public policy from UNC, an MBA from the Darden School of Business, and an undergraduate degree from Harvard. I give you Catherine Renault.
Thank you, Brian. Always great to be back in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. It's one of my very favorite places and certainly an opportunity to see a lot of good friends. It's been over 25 years, I hate to say, since I lived here, but I visited many, many times in the interim, and I think that the years that I worked at CIT, my car knew how to drive here all by its lonesome. I came so often. So I think this gives me at least some standing to offer some insight into this notion of having a common vision for the region. And what the folks asked me to talk about was sort of the bigger picture. What is this tech-based economic development all about anyways, and where did it come from? And that's what I'm going to try to do. First, though, I think it's good to acknowledge the strengths and weaknesses and the challenges and opportunities facing Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And obviously, first off, we're blessed with a world-class university. And I work all over the country, and I've been in a lot of places that would kill to have UVA in their state, never mind in their city. I mean, it's an asset that probably we take somewhat for granted here, and we shouldn't. Secondly, this location, only a few hours from D.C. and from Richmond, is a great one. I always liked living here. We're far enough away from the metropolitan areas to enjoy the good life, but close enough to access their services and their resources. When I was in graduate school here, I think I used to drive to D.C. all the time just to go to Bloomingdale's. All right, I've dated myself again, but that was before Nordstrom's was around. But a big challenge here is that we clearly value the quality of life that we have in this region. And it also means that we're, frankly, ambivalent about economic growth and economic development, and we always have been here as long as I've been around. So how do we balance the quality of life here with the demands of a potentially increasing population or the adverse effects maybe of gaining a large manufacturing plant? And how can we respond to the increasingly global economy? So in this context, many, many people turn, in my mind, to a very simplified solution. They say we need to build a tech-based economy. Indeed, this is the newest mantra for many, many communities and regions across the country and across the world. And even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, those of us who've been in the science and tech space would have been thrilled to death that everybody thought that that was the answer, because it used to not be. But now, you know, everybody thinks they're going to be the next Silicon Valley. What do we have? Silicon Alley and Silicon Beach and, I mean, all that stuff. And do you know 40 states have a vision of being the biotechnology state, which is really nuts, because while everyone's worrying about that, the lead that San Jose and Boston have over the rest of us is growing. So the divide is, in fact, getting larger, not smaller. So clearly, in my mind, it is not possible for everyone to be the biotech leader. It's not possible for everyone to necessarily have what we think of as a tech-based economy. So what's the solution for this region, and what's a vision that's achievable? To answer this, I'd like to share some thoughts about the underpinnings of the idea of tech-based economic development, and I think that going back to the source will really be helpful as we think about a better answer for this region. Back in the late 40s and early 50s, economists had an opportunity they'd never had before. One was there was data about countries and their economies that didn't exist before, and there were enough computers and they had enough computing power to do a lot of work about economics that could never be done before. And so someone decided that it would be neat to show that economic growth was the same as the product of labor times capital, which is what the traditional economic model that y'all learned in school says. So they plotted it, and guess what? It wasn't the same. The economic growth line went like that, and the capital versus labor line went like that. They said, whoa, there's a gap. What's that all about? They figured out it was knowledge. They figured out, they hypothesized that economic growth is based not only on labor and capital availability, but also on knowledge generation. Note that this is knowledge, not technology. Technology got into the picture because nobody could figure out how to count knowledge. If you think about it, it's pretty hard to do. So they used patents as a proxy. And when they plugged patents into that equation, it was a pretty good match. It in fact showed labor and capital and knowledge is a pretty good approximation for economic growth. But I know there are a lot of lawyers in this room and patent lawyers, and y'all know that patents and knowledge are not the same thing either. Patents, first of all, lots of things can't be patented. Normally, it's reserved for things that are inventions, that is, where we have taken in some knowledge and made it into a useful product. These days, we also sometimes patent discoveries, that is, something that already existed but we found out about, like a gene or something like that, or expression of a gene. So patents and knowledge are not the same thing, but people got kind of hung up on this whole patent thing. And the next thing, you found out that everybody started talking about technology as if it was the same thing as knowledge, and it's clearly not. The other thing that happened is people started to talk about where patents come from, and they started to focus on R&D, both in industries and in universities, as an important part of economic development. And this has sort of happened in the early 1980s. And the growth and emergence of the Route 128 corridor in Boston and in Silicon Valley also focused people on technology as a driver, with an emphasis on university technology. And studies were done that showed that regions with universities had higher economic growth than regions without. So this led observers to think about, quote unquote, getting technology out of universities, or what a lot of people call technology transfer. And generally, when people talk about technology transfer, they're referring to the function at most universities and federal labs, and even some companies, that protects intellectual property and licenses it either to existing or early-stage companies. And here at UVA, we have a very long history of technology transfer in the Patent Foundation and a great reputation within the university technology transfer community. And we also have in Spinner Technologies one of the newer, more innovative models for supporting startups that can come out of universities. However, I believe that formal technology transfer, if you will, I call it capital T technology transfer, is only one way for new innovations to move out of universities and into the local and regional economy. The most important avenue in my mind for what I call little T technology transfer is the education of students. So to the extent that students who come to the region to attend UVA or the other colleges in the area stay here after graduation, they share the knowledge they have gained with local and regional economies, whether they work in a startup or join an established firm. If you go back and look at the history of the computer industry as an example, and go back and look at who started all the companies in San Jose or in the Boston area, none of those early companies were spin-outs of universities. They were smart folks who had graduated from Stanford or graduated from MIT and started companies. So that means that we have a lot of opportunity here because we have so many really, really smart people who stay here. You probably know that almost 48% of the adults in Albemarle County and Charlottesville have a bachelor's degree of higher, which is compared to just under 30% for Virginia as a whole. So we have a very highly educated population here, which is a major advantage as well. It's a major asset. Another important little T technology transfer avenue is collaboration between industry and university researchers. This is because much of today's technology and innovation is tacit. That is, you cannot write it down. You have to learn it from another person. So two researchers working side by side in a laboratory, one from a company and one a professor, is an extremely efficient mode of technology transfer. So we see this working very effectively in places where there are industry groups that support basic research at the universities. For instance, the semiconductor industry had a research institute, Semicor, obviously in Austin, in the 80s that really turned around the semiconductor industry, and that was industry supporting research and working side by side with key researchers. In the old days, CIT used to have programs that encouraged this sort of collaboration, and personally, I'd like to see that time come back because I believe that for most industry, working with a university is a pretty major pain. Universities don't work on the same time frame as companies do. They have a lot of paperwork. There's just a lot of ways where it's very, very difficult, and I believe that we should provide incentives to help people bridge this cultural gap. Another aspect of this issue is entrepreneurship, and my favorite thing that I learned in graduate school is that economic theory and entrepreneurship theory don't intersect. It still boggles my mind. Because economic theory does not include entrepreneurship at all. It doesn't acknowledge the creative destruction that Schumpeter articulated back in the 1930s. But we all know from a practical point of view that entrepreneurship is alive and well in this country, and it may be our main competitive advantage. And it's certainly important here in this region. And we all know that it's an important engine of economic growth, and depending on who you believe, 30 or 40 or 50 or 60% of all new jobs come from small companies. But I'd like to be real clear that here I am not limiting the discussion to technology entrepreneurs, but focusing on high-growth entrepreneurs who create most of the new jobs. These are entrepreneurs who have highly innovative ideas and want to bring a company to the highest possible level. So while startup companies are interesting to any region, so are existing companies that are entrepreneurial, that are looking to maintain or enhance their competitive position with innovative ideas. So I believe that the intersection of these ideas is not technology-based economic development, but innovation-based economic development. So going back to the beginning, economic growth is a function of knowledge, and this includes new creative ways to do things and new creative products, and is not solely related to new technologies. So let's broaden our vision. There's an awful lot of pretty neat companies out there that were started in most of our lifetimes, probably within the last 20 years or so, and if you think about why they're a success, a lot of them, it's not because of their technology. I mean, Dell is a success story not because they built a radically better computer, but because they built a radically better distribution system. I was at a meeting in Raleigh yesterday, and the gentleman who's the head of worldwide facilities for Dell came and talked about why they put a new Dell plant in Winston-Salem. And he did not mention the word technology once. He talked about labor. He talked about cost of doing business. He talked about supply chains. He talked about agility. He did not use the word technology one time. Same thing with FedEx. FedEx isn't about technology, although they clearly are very, very capable users of technology. But that was a brand new idea when FedEx came along, the fact that you could put a system together and manage a lot of packages. Similarly, I think of Apple as a success right now, and maybe even back in the 80s, not so much for the technology as the design. Remember when the Mac came out? What a cool-looking machine that was. The very first one's the iPod. I mean, it's the design of it. It's not the, obviously, there's cool technology that gets in that little thing, but it's the design that's just as important. Ben and Jerry's favorite, very successful entrepreneurial food company. It's about the food. It's not about the technology. Go through the Inc. 500, and I guarantee you most of the companies are not technology-based, but they are all innovation-based. So I believe that innovation is the right choice for Charlottesville and the surrounding region. This encompasses the technology emerging from the university and other nonprofits in the community and builds on the creative arts and design community that's already here. And this could encompass long-time regional companies who are embracing new products and processes. And all of these offer the potential of a relatively low-impact economic growth that allow a balance with the quality of life that we currently enjoy. Having said that, I want to note that current regional economic research suggests that there are at least two other considerations that need to be addressed when planning a strategy for an innovation-based economy. Beyond just the sources of innovation, there also need to be sources of capital. Perhaps this goes without saying, but the early stages of many companies are extremely difficult to finance, and it's just getting harder. The professional venture capital community, even those who purport to do early stage financing, are trending towards having larger and larger funds and therefore doing larger and larger deals and making later and later stage investments. You basically cannot finance the $250K, $1.5 million deals anymore. So if you add this to the global challenge and the fact that Charlottesville is unfortunately not the center of the financial universe, we have an obstacle that we need to deal with. Related to this challenge is the need to provide the managerial talent and professional services required to build a vibrant innovation-based entrepreneurial community. Again, research suggests that these assets are most likely to be found in much larger metropolitan areas. An anecdote suggests that entrepreneurs want to be in a place where they can join another company if the one they are with doesn't make it. And I've even heard this in Research Triangle, where probably from your point of view it looks like a very vibrant place, but a lot of the leading biotech and IT companies say they have a very hard time recruiting people to come to the region, our region, because they feel like, what would I do if this deal fell through? Which just means they don't understand what's there, but nevertheless, it's an issue. So this is something else that we're going to have to think about here, the depth of the place. On the other hand, there are some very encouraging demographics, not the least of which I mentioned before, the highly educated population. And frankly, I think, Brian, what you mentioned before, the graying of the baby boomer generation, I think is a good thing, because I think that's a lot of entrepreneurial capacity that might be getting ready, like I have done, to leave Washington, D.C., or leave L.A. or leave San Francisco and come to a nice place to live. And I think many of us are getting ready to make the transition to smaller, more rural places, but we still want to be active and involved and potentially in starting new companies. So given the appropriate infrastructure, and this is where you need really good phone service and broadband and air service and hospitals and stuff like that, this resource could be recruited to help drive an innovation-based economy. So where do we go from here? Well, I wouldn't be a good darn grad if I didn't tell you that we need a strategy. We need to inventory our innovation assets. What are our strengths at the university, at the local nonprofits, in our local industry, in our community? What are our challenges? What do we need to improve? What do we want to be when we grow up? What is our vision for the region? What is the appropriate balance between economic development and the quality of life in Charlottesville? I would like to commend to you a model that we employed in the Research Triangle region about 3 years ago that resulted in an award-winning strategic plan and was given an award by the Economic Development Administration for the best strategic plan in the country. And it was done with very broad cooperation in our region. In North Carolina, there are 7 regional economic development partnerships that are legislatively mandated, and they cover all 100 counties, so everybody's in one of the partnerships. And they are funded partly by annual appropriations from the General Assembly and partly from private funds. The project that we worked on was facilitated by the Research Triangle Regional Partnership, but led by a senior team that headed by former Governor Jim Hunt and President Molly, well, former now President Molly Broad of the UNC system. And the team included in the end over 50 organizations in the region, like chambers of commerce and transportation groups and economic development organizations and service providers and industry and basically everybody, but we didn't invite any politicians. I wasn't part of that discussion. If anybody wants to know about that, we'll go call up Ted Abernathy, who really was the facilitator, and say, why did you decide that? But it worked pretty well. It was a very long process. It involved a lot of people's time. But in the end, the recommendations were owned by the entire community, and we're about a year and a half into implementing many of the recommendations. And basically, people took recommendations that fell in their bailiwick that would have been normally part of doing their work and have worked on those recommendations. So they really, in the end, only raised a couple of $1 million to do the implementation, and it could have taken a lot more. A key element of the strategic planning process was the innovation assets inventory. And I think this would be an important thing to do here, because everybody says, well, we have UVA, but what do we have specifically? In this process, we looked at all the sources of innovation in the region, not just the university, to find the areas that were world-class, to understand what were our specialties. And then we looked at market trends in these technology areas, because we didn't want to propose a strategy built around buggy whips, even if we were world-class in research on buggy whips. And finally, we looked at the current industrial clusters in our region and looked for overlaps with the innovation strengths. And this allowed us to identify potential and emerging areas to focus on, as well as note our traditional strengths. And the outcome were 10 strategic focus areas. They're essentially targeted clusters, and they are very, very specific. So most people say biotech. We said biological agents and infectious disease. Turns out there's over 100 researchers at the institutions in our region that are doing things around AIDS, and it turns out swine flu and avian flu and a whole bunch of other important infectious disease. And these days that's turning out to be kind of a smart choice that we made 2 years ago. We're doing pervasive computing. We're doing a number of other things. So they're not the usual high-tech clusters that everyone identifies, and I think that gives us an opportunity going forward. Frankly, I think we could do this here in Charlottesville. If there's a will, there's clearly a way, because Charlottesville has the assets to transition to an innovation-based economy and maintain the quality of life here. We have many unique qualities here that position us to further the development of the region if we all work together to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine, for that insight and experience. I'd now like to introduce Jeff Anderson. Jeff is the Executive Director of the Commonwealth of Virginia's Economic Development Marketing Organization. It is the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. Jeff manages a staff of 110 and oversees an annual operating budget of $17 million. The Virginia Economic Development Partnership identifies and markets to companies worldwide seeking to expand or relocate facilities. In addition, VEDP promotes the export of Virginia products and services throughout the International Trade Division, or through its International Trade Division. In 2004, VEDP organized and accounted for the announcement of more than 45,000 new jobs for Virginians and nearly $3.5 billion in new capital investment. And now his resume gets interesting. He's had 23 years in business. I think you've been with the partnership less than 6 months. And it includes fairly heavy-duty business. And I'll just briefly go through it. Let's see. He started with KPMG as an audit staff, managing consultant, partner, managing director. Senior vice president, KPMG Consulting. Executive vice president, financial services, Bering Point. That's what KPMG Consulting became. And then finally, executive vice president of global integration of Bering Point. So not only does he have the bureaucratic outlook, he's got the business outlook. Jeff, you know, the internet is wonderful, so you get to pull quotes and things. So Jeff has said, it's important that we present a complete picture. A complete picture represents all of the regions in Virginia's diversity and the Commonwealth's strengths. We need to know our product well, what we have to sell in each region, each city, each town, and each county in Virginia. If we do that, we can do a better job attracting businesses to all areas of Virginia. Jeff also brings one other thing to the lectern here. He lives in Albemarle County. He's lived here for over 10 years, he and his family, and so he's at home here. Jeff, thank you.
Good afternoon. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here at home. It's a little easier commute than on to Richmond. Today, one of the things I was asked is really to kind of give our perspective from the partnerships level on the role we see with the Thomas Jefferson region in the economic development strategy for Virginia. As Brian stated, I'm relatively new to the economic development world. My background is obviously in the consulting field, both on a domestic and a global basis. So in my first few months of tenure, I went through the normal orientation in Richmond, and then luckily for everyone, I then went out to visit the regions. I've spent the past 3 months visiting the 18 economic development regions in Virginia. And the purpose of that was really twofold. One, I went unaccompanied so everyone could give me their perspective on what the partnership has and has not done well. But more importantly, it was to work with the regions to define where they see themselves today. What is it that they believe that they have as their base? What is it that they have as a baseline that they're offering to the marketplace, specifically the clients that are relocating and expanding in Virginia? That was an interesting discussion. As you go through the diverse states such as Virginia, you get many different perspectives and many different strategies. One of the things that we are working on in the next set of visits out to the regions is really going to be dealing with is, okay, we understand your vision, we understand your current assets. What is it that we need to do different? What is it that we need to say, and what is it we need to present to the marketplace that is going to attract the companies that you want in your region to your marketplace? The marketplace has changed. One of the things that was interesting for me, I don't come from economic development, but I do come from having picked and cited many workforces, not only domestically but globally. The channels that I think are perceived as the channels for economic development have changed, and they've changed rapidly. I know in the 10 years that I was citing workforces throughout the U.S. and then later a part of my career globally, I never once went through an entity known as Virginia Economic Development Partnership. Didn't even know they existed as an entrepreneur. The marketplace has changed. People are picking their sites, and they are citing their workforces based upon their understanding of their strategies and what communities have to offer to solve their business propositions. And that marketplace is going to continue to change and continue to change quickly. Virginia has assets that are well beyond what a lot of states have. We have a tremendous, tremendous set of things that we can offer to the business community, and a lot of the business community is located here because of those strategic advantages. As we look at the Thomas Jefferson region and working with them to start to articulate that strategy, one of the things that we are really going to focus on from the partnership level is being very clear and being very concise about the initiatives that we want to foster in a particular region. At the state level, we are going to go to market through the industry verticals. That is the way it's currently designed, but we are actually updating those to align with what those strategies we heard in the regions are more likely to lead to growth within Virginia. In addition to that, we're going to define what I will call initiatives. And initiatives are things that we believe cut across the regions and really will drive growth for Virginia, which is the role of the partnership. Those initiatives are things that, in some cases are going to drive economic growth, particularly in a region that has as at the base of their strategy that core. Others are going to have what I will call a multiplier effect. They will fit into a part of a region, but not as directly as it will with others. As we look at the Thomas Jefferson region, this is a blessed region. You've already heard about the assets that everyone has. What we're looking for from the Thomas Jefferson region as we work with the partnership to promote Virginia is what are the verticals and what are the industry initiatives that you have as core to your strategy in this region. We understand that part of that is around high tech and the professional services that go along with that. What is it as we look at the Thomas Jefferson region, this is a blessed region.
What is it that
we want
to
tell the marketplace that we want to locate in the Thomas Jefferson region? We have to be clear about that. We have to state very clearly what we believe our assets are today, what we think the things are that we need to add to our diversity, what are the other assets that we need to attract. And those assets could very clearly around the technology face be around broadband expansion into the region. It can clearly be about what are we going to do as far as our workforce and recruiting. But more importantly, what is it that we believe we have the support of the community, the economic development world, and the business community to promote in this region. By doing that around the things that the Thomas Jefferson region believes are important, we'll be able to be clear, we'll be able to be concise, but more importantly, as was stated earlier, we'll be able to engage the private side of our economy. As someone who comes from the private side of the economy, one of the last decisions we made before I left the partnership was where to locate some of our diversified workforce. As with every other company that's trying to solve a business problem, we're trying to do it at the lowest price point with the highest quality. And as in Virginia, you have a unique opportunity. Whereas I was running financial services, as with most of my competitors, I moved a lot of services offshore. Virginia has a unique advantage. The federal government doesn't allow that. The federal government will not allow you to take certain services offshore. So as we look at Virginia, there's clearly an opportunity for us to fulfill a market niche. Companies are moving what I will call distributed services jobs out of the high price areas. They're moving them south. They're leaving Northern Virginia, they're leaving New York, they're leaving the high price points. What we have to define in the Thomas Jefferson region as a part of this is, what part of that proposition do you want to solve? What is it that you want to offer to the marketplace that the marketplace clearly understands what solution you're solving? We've seen companies coming to Virginia moving south out of the Northern Virginia area. The most recent one was one that was announced in Orange County. Companies want to be on the supply chain that leads south out of D.C. It is a lucrative marketplace. What are the assets that what Thomas Jefferson region is going to offer to that community? We need to be clear. We need to understand what it is we have to fulfill as far as infrastructure. But we have to communicate that into the marketplace so that the private and the public partnership can start to occur. One of the things, though, the other group that I engaged in addition to the regions were the consultants who serve this marketplace. Most companies will turn to a consultant to help them identify what the next location is going to be. Now, everybody has a view of consultants. I've heard all the jokes. Luckily, we're higher up the food chain historically than lawyers, but not much. Consultants have a role to play. Consultants' jobs are to get the client in the location that has the workforce and the infrastructure that they need. They also have to do it in conjunction with the incentives that they were given to get it at the price point that the company wants. In order for the one thing I heard in droves from the consulting community that serves this marketplace is, what is Virginia? What is Virginia? Where do you want us when we have this type of opportunity? Where do you want us to focus? Do you want us to focus in Southside? Do you want us to focus in Southwest? Do you want us to focus in the Thomas Jefferson region? Our job at the partnership is to work with the regions, particularly the Thomas Jefferson region in this case, to articulate what we want. And you've heard today that clearly the strategy is around the high-tech world, the biotech, high-tech manufacturing, and the broader set of high-tech jobs that fill out that professional services cadre. How is it that we want to engage the marketplace? That's really the job that the partnership is going to be working with Thomas Jefferson region on. Is we've got to be very clear in helping the business community understand where to engage with us. Certain examples are with, do we really want to promote the technology corridor to the north? Do we want to communicate that from Charlottesville to Northern Virginia, we are building the assets to bring technology jobs south, leveraging off of our university, leveraging off of the National Ground Intelligence Service up north of here, leveraging off of the communities and the companies that already exist to our north. If we want to do that, we have to do a baseline assessment of the assets we have. We have to identify what the companies are that we're going to engage with. And we need to communicate to the marketplace what we're doing to fulfill that business requirement. You have to go directly to the companies. They're not going to get it from any place else. You have to target the companies and deliver your message directly to their doorstep. We have a process and we have a plan in place to do that with the regions. Secondly, an obvious area for the Thomas Jefferson region is around the whole focus around the university and the biotech and the medical field. We have the university. We obviously have the hospital here. We also have a program underway that's been supported by the last three governors of Virginia to focus more money on R&D. The question we're going to have for the Thomas Jefferson region is, where are you going to use those dollars? What is the collaboration point with private industry, and what's the collaboration point with the other research institutions in Virginia? Are you going to be mostly more closely tied to the Howard Hughes Institute type initiatives? Are you going to be more closely tied to VCU? What we need to, once we understand that strategy, we'll clearly want to build out the assets in coordination with the facility that is most likely correlates with. So we're going to be building out facilities east of here and in collaboration between UVA and VCU around R&D and biotech. Are we going to be building out facilities north up towards Howard Hughes? Those are the things that we want to work with the Thomas Jefferson region on to get communication out so that the private side of the business proposition can understand that and can engage with us in a proactive manner. So that's high level where we are, and I know we're going to be opening up to a series of questions and answers, but we're going to continue to drive that, as I stated, on a regional basis. That's the role of the partnership, is to get that message out and to make sure it's clearly understood by the private and the public sectors what their roles are and how to collaborate. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. We've now come to Bob Damari. I think everyone in the room knows Bob. I've seen Bob come to grips with this area and its unique nature. He's had 35 years of experience in economic development. And prior to joining the Thomas Jefferson Partnership in 1996, he held a number of positions with the Virginia Department of Economic Development. As director of marketing for that agency, Bob was responsible for the state's worldwide outreach marketing and international trade assistance programs, as well as for work of the Virginia Film Office. Besides his experience in administering state economic development programs, Bob was director of the firm of Coopers and Lybrand, where he was responsible for the preparation of a master plan and economic development strategy for the city of Newark, New Jersey. He also spent more than 10 years doing planning and community development work for the Commonwealth of Virginia and the city of Hartford, Connecticut. And Bob, is it true? I've heard someone recently drove through Newark and saw a sign said, "We're better than we smell." I'm sorry, I had to ask. Bob received his degree in city planning from the University of Virginia. Bob?
Thank you very much, Brian. I think, mentioning Newark and Charlottesville in the same breath is kind of interesting juxtaposition, I think. But in any event, it's my pleasure to get in front of you for the third time and talk about a common vision. I think our previous speakers set the context very well and has spoken to the issue of technology-driven economies, the assets that we have here in Charlottesville. I would just like to put it into a context, and we can open up for questions, and I think talk a little bit about maybe some of the issues that we can kind of put forth again to hopefully spark the interest that we need from the business community and the university and those folks that I think are essential to move forward with this common vision. I think Jeff's presentation sort of reinforced the fact that I think we're at the right place at the right time because, given Jeff's perspectives, and the challenge that we have to begin to identify our targets and finding out where we want to go and how that relates to the state's initiatives and the initiatives with the university, I think all of this is very fortuitous. Just a quick overview perspective. I've been here 10 years. Actually, last week was my 10th anniversary with the partnership. Time flies when you're having fun. It's been a really a great ride over the last 10 years. But also that 10 years has really made it clear to me that this whole economy is at a state of transition. Brian mentioned the changes in terms of the loss of manufacturing jobs. We've lost major basic industry employers. And I think, you know, everyone needs to understand the fact that economic development, at least for the way most of us define it, is the creation of basic jobs. I mean, we have economic development going on here. I mean, we have a unique economy that attracts wealthy individuals who certainly add to that economy. They spend money in commercial establishments. It forces the growth of shopping centers and all sorts of things here. We have 2% unemployment. So we certainly have an economy that's thriving, and that's a little bit kind of our worst enemy, if you will. Because we have a situation here where most of us are pretty good shape. We're pretty happy with the way things are. The difficulty that we're seeing in this economy is the fact that we're truly lacking in diversity. I mean, we're an economy now of the rich and the not so rich, and we're an economy that is driven by, if you will, a lot of the creation of non-basic employers, a lot of commercial retail establishments. And so I think our challenge is to understand where we're going with this economy and what we can do about it as we move through this transition period. So I'd just like to talk a little bit about maybe some of those issues that I think need to be part of our focus in coming up with this common vision. I think we can go about doing a common vision in a couple of ways. I mean, we can certainly target those companies we want and we feel would be a fit and a match for this community and the assets that we have to offer. But I think in that process, I think it's important to get people engaged is to understand why are we doing this. I mean, if our economy is so good and we have a situation where we're the best place in the country in which to live, how do we gain that that interest and that excitement and the need to move forward and do something more? I think look at some of the issues, and some of them are kind of becoming, pretty aware for most of us. With this change and transition, we're one of the few economies, I believe, when we talk quality of life and how we do economic development and preserve the quality of life. I was commenting earlier today that the quality of life we have here is one of the few communities that I feel where the quality of life is an economic driver. I mean, the quality of life drives our economy. We attract people solely for our quality of life. I mean, I got a call yesterday from someone in upstate New York who wants to move a small manufacturing business to Charlottesville. Hadn't been here for 8 years, but studied it on the internet and thought it would be a good place to live, and we have better weather. And so, you know, how can he move his small manufacturing business down here? And that's been the repeated trend over and over again. So quality of life drives a lot of what happens here. So certainly we have to maintain it, and certainly we have to consider it as part of our, if you will, overall strategy. But also that has created what I feel are some key issues that I think we can all rally around. Obviously, workforce housing. The challenge that we have is that we attract people and they come and they have their money and they have their either their position that's run nationally or internationally, and so they don't depend on the jobs here. They come here because they want to live here. So of course, land prices have been increasing, I don't know, exponentially. I mean, it's almost mind-boggling. In that process, it creates a bigger challenge for us as we try to say, how do we start replacing the basic jobs that we've lost from traditional manufacturers? How do we look at that innovative entrepreneurship? How do we provide the environment for these new and emerging companies and people that are creative and they want to come here and they start businesses? How do we create the environment that, you know, these people can flourish? I mean, it's good to have the university. It's good to have the quality of life. It's good to have all of these obvious assets. But, gosh, we still need a place where these companies can locate, where they can grow, where they can flourish. And how does that sort of orchestrate it through our community? So When we talked about this common vision 3 years ago, we sort of laid out some of these problems. We've talked about the issues that we have with the growth that we're receiving from the successful quality of life situation that becomes kind of a national phenomenon. So how do we go about moving forward? How do we get beyond an annual luncheon and begin the process? Well, in talking with Brian and certainly with Jeff and getting his insights on the state's regional perspectives, I think certainly we want to move forward and begin to not only target those types of basic businesses that we feel are appropriate here, but also to begin to address some of the issues that need to be addressed if we're going to be successful in having these businesses either move here or be created here. So to do that, I have spoken briefly with folks at VPDC, at the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce, and certainly CVG and the Charlottesville Venture Group. And we feel that we've had some discussions along these lines in the past. But our intent now is between these four organizations, the partnership, CVG, VPDC, and the chamber, we're going to begin by identifying a nucleus of several people from each of these organizations. And what we want to do is just to begin, and we will meet next month in March, and we want to start thinking about how the process of coming up with a common vision can be initiated. We want to prepare an action plan with timelines and methods for reporting progress. And in that process, we certainly will solicit widespread involvement. And then we want to also talk about how do we begin implementation. So, I mean, it's kind of a challenge in many ways for us to kind of get together and indicate that we want to do something. I guess the real challenge is moving forward and keeping the momentum going. So as part of this effort and as part of this luncheon, we certainly would solicit any expression of interest in participation in this process. At least we might begin to get an idea of those individuals who either have the time, the inclination, the willingness to see if they can become or want to become part of this process, and you know, join in the effort to number one, address issues, and number two, decide on what companies would be appropriate to locate here, and then in turn what we need to do to be successful in locating them here. So I think this is the call to action. We want to have our community engaged in this process. I think it's important that we begin to, if you will, reduce the polarization, the change initiatives in the sense that, you know, we have folks who like it just the way it is and don't want change, and we have folks, I think, who recognize the need for better-paying jobs and a more diverse economy and you know, bringing an environment here that is more inclusive than exclusive. So I think we're all pretty much on the same page if we could only understand each other better. So I think one of the efforts here is in the common vision process is to bring the broader community together and understand what economic development is and what it isn't. Because, as I said, we're getting economic development, whether we like it or not. It's just whether it's the kind of economic development we want. So with that, I'm going to kind of turn it back over to Brian, and I know you may have some questions, but again, the most important message I want to leave with you is that, you know, we hope to begin the process, and then I will just put in one last plug for tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock, where the Albemarle County Board will consider their membership in the partnership, and I would encourage you, you know, certainly attend that public hearing, and even if you just show up and indicate your support for that decision on their part, I think it would be a good thing. Obviously, we need everyone to participate in this process if we're going to be successful.
Just to reemphasize, I really think it's important that businesses step up for business reasons. I don't think a bunch of do-gooders are going to get this done. We need people who think about their own bottom lines and strategically how their business fits in this community 10 years from now and what they need to have it fit. That's the kind of hard-nosed input that I think is going to drive this. So let's look at some of these questions. First question, why is UVA not at the table with VPTC, CRG, or CVG and the partnership? We did that intentionally simply because we feel business has got to take the lead on this. I've asked UVA, would they take the lead on this? And they said no. They're not in the economic development business. So if we're going to shape our future, it's got to come from this group. So that's the easy answer to that. Now, if you want to add anything, please feel free. How does economic development deal with those who see growth as an enemy to the quality of life? I'll start with Catherine, if you don't.
There's a balance, I think, between economic development and quality of life. And to me, the way to go is towards essentially what I would call low-impact growth. That is, we don't have to have the old dirty smokestacks. We don't have to have polluting industry. We don't have to have that sort of economic development from the old days of chasing buffaloes, we used to call them. Entrepreneurial growth, a lot of high tech is relatively clean. You know, needless to say, there's going to be more people and more traffic on 29 and all of that good stuff, and that's certainly an issue, and I don't see any way around that one. But I think we can certainly deal with a lot of growth without necessarily being in sort of, you know, what people used to consider economic development was only about basically smokestack chasing.
Obviously, one of the things we want to work with the regions is really understand how you want to capitalize on the entire region. I think when people think about economic development, they focus on just one aspect of a community. There are certain parts of economic development that are appropriate for the Thomas Jefferson region as you move out into Louisa and Orange and Nelson that you may not want in Albemarle County. What we want to do is make sure we have a clear strategy that communicates the entire region and helps business understand how they fit into the region and where businesses are appropriate within a particular region. As I was speaking of before, if we understand as we go through the R&D development with the University of Virginia and the other universities in Virginia, there's going to be an obvious need for economic development as associated with that development. There'll be a need for wet lab space. There'll be a need for incubation centers. There'll be a need for what I will call initial stage development. Those are all things that are a part of doing R&D at a university. And what the question was asked before is, why isn't UVA at the table? I'll be honest with you, Leonard and I are going to be speaking, Leonard Sanders and I are going to be speaking after the legislative session is done, so that we can understand what the role of economic development is in conjunction with the Thomas Jefferson Partnership to really leverage off of their R&D. It is going to promote economic development. It's going to develop certain assets in the region. It's really understanding and communicating to the community, to the business partners, how we want to do that. The whole purpose that we're doing of the R&D is to get the productivity and the enhancement in the business community and in the business world of, in this case, the Thomas Jefferson region, but the broader U.S. economy, so that we can start to drive the innovation and the productivity that we all value. And how does that fit in with the overall development of the region?
Do you remember the question, Bob?
Repeat the question.
Okay. How does economic development deal with those who see growth as an enemy to the quality of life?
I'll comment on a couple of things. As I mentioned when I was up at the podium, we have economic development. Growth is coming. So the two are, you know, the two shouldn't be viewed as mutually exclusive. I mean, if we do economic development, then we're going to be affected by growth. I mean, we're getting growth. I mean, the question is, as I said earlier, our quality of life is driving our economic development. So people are coming here, you know, regardless of the jobs that are created or not created. So what we have is a community here where we're driving up housing costs, we're driving up land costs, people are coming. I can look all over the mountainside and see new houses going up as you can. Louisa, Zion Crossroads, Orange County, all the suburban counties. So growth is here. The issue is, how do we diversify that growth and provide better jobs for more people? I mean, we don't have basic employment. We have the rich and we have the poor. I mean, Albemarle County has a $20,000 spread between average and median family income.
Now, that tells you that if you have a $20,000 spread between median and family income, that means you have an awful lot of rich folks that drive up the average family income. I mean, most other communities, the spread, if anything, is several thousand dollars or nothing. So, I mean, so it just kind of gives you an indication of the type of development we're having, the type of growth we're having. As far as UVU being at the table, I think the question that was probably asked of Brian, why isn't UVA at this table?
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is UVA certainly will be at the table, and we expect them to be an active participant in this process, and certainly hope they will, because in addition to the business community, it's the university that's going to be crucial to whatever we do. The question, as Brian stated many times, is that UVA doesn't want to go, knocking on everyone's door to say, let's get a common vision done. So we feel the partnership in consort with the other business-related organizations needs to take the lead on that.
Thank you, Bob. And I'll direct this to Jeff first and then down the line. With such low unemployment, how do we target businesses that bring their own workforce? And what are those businesses?
Now, with the low unemployment, you have a set of business initiatives that you want to undertake. And sometimes I think people look at the unemployment number and draw a linear conclusion that everybody is happily employed. The truth of the matter is you want to understand what you're going to do to create wealth in the community. So what you want to do is target those businesses that move you along your strategic vision. So at the end of the day, you may have 2% unemployment. My question for the community would be is what's your underemployment? You have 48% of your community that has college education degrees and above. Are they in jobs that are creating the wealth opportunities that they want? Do you have the business perspective? Do you have the businesses attracted to this region that fits your skill sets? One of the companies that we just announced is a technology-based company. And they're going to be bringing in jobs that allow people to move from what I would consider more of a blue-collar environment into the white-collar environment. That job is a perfect opportunity for people in the Orange County region to move their skill sets up. There are entry-level jobs into the technology world that this company will promote. I think that's all in keeping with the strategy for the region, and I think it's in keeping with the strategy for economic development, which is making sure the people who live in the region have the maximum opportunity to capitalize on their skills and create opportunities for them and their family. And that's really what we're targeting as we look through and work with the region on what types of companies we want to attract.
Thank you, Jeff.
The other thing I think we have to worry about is being complacent. I don't know about the rest of you, but the number one thing I've learned in my life is shift happens. So shift, S-H-I-F-T, shift. I once said that in front of Dr. Temple, and I thought he would fall off his chair. But seriously, we've all been places where everything looks hunky-dory, and the next day, somebody's gone. I mean, I used to work for AT&T. I think it's gone. I work for a lot of companies that aren't there anymore. I've been in places where universities come and go. I worked in industries that aren't there anymore. So, we can't be complacent. This business of being a diverse economy, of having multiple bets, I think, is the most important thing.
Thank you. This is directed to Bob, Bob Damari. What are our region's major innovation assets?
Well, I think these have been kind of addressed in part by previous speakers, but obviously the innovation assets are centered, of course, on the university. But I think in addition to that, and I think Catherine alluded to this, one of the things that I've seen over the last 5 or 10 years since I've been here is, this quality of life thing and attracting people is kind of a two-edged sword. Certainly it attracts a lot of retirees, a lot of people that may be considered, not actively engaged in the business process. But the thing I've found is that it also has attracted a lot of relatively young people who either because of their current job or their financial flexibility have moved here for the quality of life. But they've also brought with them a desire to maintain their active involvement in the community and business and starting businesses and working for startup businesses. So I think we do have innovation asset here in the people. I think the issue is how do we marshal that asset and how do we kind of really present those opportunities for them, because I think they want to do things. I mean, I've seen small businesses grow here, and then the challenge is how do we get those small businesses located in situations that will allow them to grow. And so, you know, we're just not used to having that, opportunity to do that. So I think it's in our people, and it's in our university, and, of course, it's in our, you know, all these other amenities that were mentioned before.
Thank you, Bob. Next question. The Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development and the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council are only two of the many regional organizations. What is the mechanism for drawing all the organizations into this effort? And I'll take a stab at that one. Now, you know, certainly, unless the community buys into this community-wide, nothing is going to happen. We needed a place to start. So we looked to the business organizations, the four business organizations, the Chamber of Commerce, Charlottesville Venture Group, VPTC, and TJ Ped taking the lead. That's a simple answer to start somewhere, and this will be one of the first questions that needs to be answered by that group. I don't think we have that answer here today. Here's one directed to Catherine Renault. How important is the Council for Entrepreneurial Development to North Carolina's success in furthering the growth of knowledge-based industry? You might want to explain what CED is.
I sure will. Thank you. The CED is a very unique organization that's in the Triangle. It's completely funded. It's now, I think, over 20 years old by the private sector. There's no state money or federal money in it. And it's essentially a place for entrepreneurs and early-stage companies to go and learn how to do a better job of growing successful companies. So they run events, they run a lot of training seminars and that sort of thing. They also run our annual venture capital conference, and they run an annual conference on biotech and an annual conference on information technology. And I personally was really taken aback by CED when I first went to Raleigh 7 years ago, having been very active in the entrepreneurial community in all of Virginia in my role at CIT. The fact that it was private sector driven really knocked me out, but it was, to me, a very, very important part of creating a very vibrant entrepreneurial culture in our region, in the Research Triangle region, and I think that's real, real important. It celebrates entrepreneurship. They've just now started to go statewide, and we're now trying to link up entrepreneurial support around our entire state, and we just won a Kellogg grant to do that and work particularly in rural areas and with minority and underserved communities. But a CED-type organization, whether state or private funded, would be a logical extension of a lot of the work that's gone here. I think one of the first times I came to Charlottesville in a professional capacity in 1990 was to visit what there used to be an incubator here in an old building someplace, and I couldn't figure out where it is anymore if my life depended on it, but it was sponsored by the university at that time. And you know, those sorts of things have gone away. The venture group is a positive thing, but you know, we could certainly do a lot more in this region in that area.
Thank you. Okay, can our area be promoted without the support of government and the university? And do you think that we have that cooperation? I think the answer is no and yes. But go ahead. Bob, maybe you can handle that one.
Repeat that, please.
Can our region be promoted without the support of local government and the university? And do you think we have that cooperation?
Well, obviously, the whole concept of a common vision is to have everyone on board in that process. Can we promote it? Sure. Can we promote it as effectively? Probably not. But I think as we bring all of these elements together, the private sector, the educational institutions, and the governments, I would hope that, you know, we can communicate that common vision in a way that people don't feel like it's either, you know, one position or another, and that we can address these issues and what we want as an economic region, and that we can move forward. I mean, but we have to start somewhere, and we may have to begin, you know, our promotion or our development of that common vision, you know, piece by piece. But ultimately, our objective is to get everyone on board.
Okay, and the last question, and it's one that I like, says, has common vision made progress in the last year? In what ways? And it speaks as if common vision is an entity unto itself, which I like. It's sort of a good start. Bob, it's probably you're about the only one who might be able to answer that.
Well, I think the progress that's been made, and maybe the longer we're involved, when I say we, those folks here that have been associated with this concept or this process, when you say progress, I think the progress is made in part short steps in realization that there are issues that we have as a community, even though, you know, everything seems great for many people. I think the change that's occurred in the last, I think in the last year or even 18 months in terms of what's happening around our landscape. I mean, I always think of the analogy of, you know, dropping a frog in a pan or pot of boiling water. I think the heat is starting to turn up, and maybe we're not quite as sensitive to some of the issues that are coming and we're seeing around us, but we're beginning to be. The heat is getting more intense. We're looking at, as I said earlier, residential development that is much more aggressive than it was certainly 18 months, 2 years ago. I mean, we see this happening all around the region. And so that's certainly creating pressures on rural areas. It's creating pressures on infrastructure and traffic and all these other things we've talked about before. But somehow I think the realization is there. We have commercial retailers coming into our area. National builders now build in our market that was once only served by local developers and local builders. So all of a sudden Charlottesville is on more people's map. So have we made progress? Probably not in really defining that common vision, but I think events are beginning to overtake the process. So now I think more folks are seeing that need, that we better get on the stick and get something going, because the urgency is becoming ever more evident.
Right. And just to add to that, from my perspective, we've seen what I'll call an event 3 years ago turn into real action, and that's going to be all-inclusive. So I think this last year we've defined ownership of this thing. We've identified who needs to lead it. Whether or not it gets led remains to be seen. But I think we've made great strides in coming together. So I see last year as a very good year. I think it'll be not as good as next year, though. So thank you, panelists. We appreciate your participation and your insight, and I'll turn it back over to Gail.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Brian, Kathy, and Bob. The word we has been used quite a lot this afternoon, but as Brian, I think, was just trying to remind everyone, we really means you. And we will be sending a survey to you. And it's important that we hear from everyone in the room. There's a comment section. Write in it, please. Send us your ideas. And if you would like to be involved, include your name in the comment section, and you will hear from us. So thank you again for coming, and we look forward to seeing you next year. Thanks.
This has been a presentation of the VPTC Luncheon Series, Towards a Common Vision, a Call to Action, co-produced by the Thomas Jefferson Economic Development Partnership. You're listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a public service of Wordcast Productions. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of CPN or Wordcast Productions. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thanks for listening.